crank up the volume and get ready. It's time for Independent Artist Spotlight, right here on MusicRanchRadio.com.
All right, we are 1 minute early. How do you like that? 9:50.
It's not like us.
Back east, it's 9. No, it's 8:59 back east.
Oh, not quite 9 o'clock there.
Right, yeah, we're not quite there. And, man, what a special night we got tonight.
I know. It's not music, but it's an artist of nonetheless.
Right. And Jason, how are you? Jason Shine.
I'm good. And you?
Well, what do we got going there? That's kind of weird.
Oh, we got a little glitch already.
Already.
How about now?
Oh, hold her. We're about there. I'll try it again.
How about now?
No.
No, what do we got? Push your plug down on top there and make sure we're... How's that?
How about now?
I think we're...
I got left.
We got you. Okay, now we try it.
How about now?
Oh, it's still cutting out.
We never tried that, did we?
Yeah, we did.
And Jason Poole will be calling you in just a bit.
Yeah, typical. Typical. Here we go. We're off and rolling. We got a special deal tonight, though. And we got to work on this microphone, though, for sure, and see what we got going on. That one always works great. So let's talk to Jason a little bit, too. You go ahead and talk with Jason. I'll get him set up.
We have Jason, who hasn't seen all the propaganda on Facebook from the... I can't hear myself all that well. Am I up high enough?
There you go.
The Bighorn Basin Paleontological Institute.
That's a mouthful, right?
It is. It's worse than Yellowstone Bighorn Research Association. But they've been out to YBRA for... many years. This year was their longest year to dig up bones.
Digging up bones.
Yeah, this is our eighth season in the area, but the first under our new organization, and a nice long field season this year, and we're always happy to be out here. It's an incredibly beautiful part of the country, and it's just a privilege to get to dig up dinosaurs out here.
Lots of them, too.
Ugh, more than we can deal with, really.
It's nice. One of the favorite groups that comes out is these guys, because they switch out every week, so we get new faces with their groups, and we have a yard full of dinosaur bones. So it's always when they leave, we're back to normal. No, that's cool.
They're too big and heavy to move more than once.
Yeah, I know. I've helped you with one.
Okay. We keep going. We're about there.
Boy.
I don't know what we got going, but it's not good.
So your season winds down Saturday as you're finally pulling out and loading up the bones. And
well, our last group of participants left Saturday, August 12th, I believe, but I'm out here doing a couple other things. My family's out here now on vacation. So, the season is mostly over. I head back east on Saturday, and the bones get delivered to the Academy of Natural Sciences of Drexel University on Wednesday, September 6th.
And Jason Poole starts over with them again.
Yes. That's when we hand them over to Jason Poole, who is our director of fossil preparation. And he is a master fossil preparator there at the Academy of Natural Sciences and a well-known paleo artist, I might add.
Yes. And we have a nice new painting in our lodge from him, too.
Yes.
Quite the artist.
So once I drop them off at the Academy, they are all his domain, and he works his magic on them. Takes the rocks off of the bones, glues things back together, fills in the missing parts when necessary, and then that's when we kind of all work as a team back on the bones to start studying them. We can't really do much with them until they're clean and pristine.
So that's what he does. That's how all that works.
Yes, exactly. He's also an educator there, too, and where he works on the bones is an open-air lab there at the Academy, so they get to educate people from all over the world, visitors, the tens of thousands of visitors to the Academy every year get to see Jason and his team working on those bones.
Yeah, I was going to try and find a way to get him out here to live, but that wouldn't work because, say, instead of making a step and take him there, he could stay here and do it, but we'd need the tens of thousands of visitors to watch him do it.
That's right.
All right, guys, well, here's what we're going to do. We're going to make a little switch here on a cord. It's okay. We can get this little issue lined out, and we've got the perfect song that we're going to play.
All right.
While we're doing this, and we will be right back, folks. Don't go away.
Last night I dug your picture out from our old dresser drawer. I set it on the table, and I talked to it till 4. I read some old love letters words right up till the break of dawn. Yeah, I've been sitting alone, digging up bones. Then I went through the jewelry and I found our wedding rings. I put mine on my finger and I gave yours a fling. Across this lonely bedroom of our recent broken home, yeah, tonight I'm sitting alone, digging up bones. I'm digging up bones, I'm digging up bones, exhuming things that's better left alone. Sitting alone, digging up bones. And I went through the closet and I found some things in there, like that pretty negligee that I bought you to wear. And I recall how good you looked each time you had it on. Yet tonight I'm sitting alone, digging up bones. I'm digging up. I'm digging up bones, exhuming things that's better left alone. I'm resurrecting memories of a love that's dead and gone. Yet tonight I'm sitting alone, digging up better left alone. I'm resurrecting memories of love that's dead and gone. Yet tonight I'm sitting alone, digging up bones. I'm digging up bones, exhuming things that's better left alone.
There we go, digging up some bones here tonight and fixing microphones and digging up bones. So
hey, it could be part of the song.
Do we have you back now, Jason?
How are you sound?
Oh, how about now?
Oh, nice.
There, Faith.
Yeah.
There great. You go. 220, 221. Now
whatever,
we're plugged
whatever
in.
It takes.
That's right. So you guys continue, and I'm going to see if I can get the other Jason on the phone.
Yeah, you call him Jason Poole. What I think I asked you this when I went out in the field with you the one time this year is, how do you find these places? I know that one has been there for a while, but do you find new spots, or how would you find these?
Well, we spend a good bit of time just hiking around what we call prospecting, which is the highly technical term for essentially walking around really slowly looking down at the ground. That's about as complicated as it gets.
Well, that sounds fun to me.
It's fantastic. Honestly, that's my favorite part of it is the prospecting. The next great find is always right around the corner. But it's really quite simple. Folks often ask us, well, how am I going to recognize that that's a bone? It just looks like a rock to me. Within 5 minutes, I can have you out there recognizing bone, and you'll see it everywhere. It's just a matter of getting an eye for it. You're looking for colors, you're looking for textures, sometimes shape, but for the most part, it's pretty simple, and within 5 minutes, you'll see it everywhere.
I was hooked the first time I went out with you. It was so much fun.
It's a lot of fun, and like I said, the next great discovery is always right around the corner or behind that rock. And not only that, you get to hike around these incredibly beautiful areas, beautiful, rugged places almost no one ever goes. So that's really part of the adventure.
Yes.
Now, do you ever dig up anything, Jason, that doesn't look like bones?
Oh, maybe? Absolutely. Well, well, we do have one funny story. We did work for several days on a huge jacket that we were convinced was part of an ankylosaur, one of those four-legged armored dinosaur with a big club on the end of his tail.
Right.
We were sure that there was good bone inside this rock. So we backed my truck up into this really rugged area. We loaded this huge jacket onto my truck, brought it back to the academy, worked on it there for quite a while, and it turned out just to be a concretion, just a mineral filled rock. And I probably should not be saying this. All my colleagues, I'm sure, are listening right now.
Well, I asked Greg the other day. I said, "What happens when they dig up the nose cone off an alien spaceship?" Yes.
Yeah, what do they call Whoops. That?
Well, that would be called alienology.
Well, I don't know. We haven't done that yet. But when we do, you'll be the first to know.
Give me a call, yeah, because I really want to know.
We've got the new name for it.
Alienology. All right, I'm going to try.
Let's get Jason Poole on the phone too. Oh, you guys had. I know that one you had jackhammers on. Was that the Triceratops skull? And
that was. It was part of the frill or the shield behind the head of a Triceratops and at least one of the horns from it.
And have you ever got it out?
We did get it out. We got out those parts. That was last year. And this was in the most remote and difficult place to get to that we have ever worked.
I've
and
seen some of the of tools that, you brought. Yeah.
On top of that, that rock was incredibly hard. Some of the hardest rock I've ever worked on in my life. And frankly, Triceratops are pretty common and not worth that much trouble. But this one looked like it was a juvenile Triceratops. And those are not that common. Uh-huh. So that's why we went to all that trouble.
Yeah.
I think we have Jason Poole with us.
Oh, do we?
Jason, are you there? Hello?
Technical difficulties.
Jason Poole, calling Jason Poole. Oh, you guys go ahead. Well, apparently he's not.
Well, Kirk Johnson was just out here, and didn't they just find a full skull in eastern Montana?
They did, among other things, but that's why eastern Montana is world famous and why paleontologists flock from the world, all over the world, to eastern Montana, because there's so many dinosaurs there. They're so complete, so well preserved. It's a mecca for paleontology.
He said it was 5,000 pounds.
I believe it. Those animals were the size of a small school bus, and wow. A third of their size was that skull.
I don't think our Rubbermaid wagon would have got that out of there.
You need a bigger one.
Well, last year you had to have the giant end loader from the Warren Jason, Corey come get you.
Jason Poole, were you there?
There he is. I heard something.
Are you with us, Jason?
Oh, boy.
I think he's having trouble on his end this time.
Stand on the roof, Jason.
I can hear you.
Oh, he can hear us.
I can hear you guys.
You're coming in a little better now.
Yeah, yeah. Can you stand on the railing of the porch, Jason?
I'm out back with one arm up, and I'm holding on to a hanger in the shape of bunny ears.
Well, that's good, because we kind of got you now.
Yeah. There you go.
Okay, good. I'm not going to move from this position
there
for the next
go.
Hour.
This is good timing, Jason, because I ran out of good things to say about you.
Yeah. Well, we've missed you. You've been gone, 2 weeks now? 3 weeks, maybe. You ready for all these bones?
I'd say, what's that?
I said, are you
ready? Yeah.
Are you there?
I keep thinking, I'm still here. I keep thinking about what it's going to be like. I'm going to figure out a place for them all.
Yeah, that was Jason's main job when he went back, is to figure out where we're going to put all these jackets until he can get through them all.
How do you guys ship those?
We load up what we can in the back of my truck and load up the rest in an open trailer from U-Haul, and I pull it all the way back to Philly.
Wow.
It's a long, slow, expensive ride.
Go ahead.
He doesn't even just slap stamps on these things and put an address on.
UPS.
UPS will pick them up. They're over 50 pounds.
Our budget isn't there yet.
What's the heavy?
UPS have that thing like... Anything that would fit into a box is a certain set price.
Flat rate shipping, yeah. I don't think we're there.
What's the biggest one you've ever shipped weight-wise?
Oh, gosh. Well,
3 tons.
3 tons?
Was it?
We shipped a 3-ton jacket when we worked in Argentina.
Wow.
Jason Poole and I worked in Argentina about 12 years ago now on a dinosaur called Dreadnoughtus, and it's one of the largest animals. Certainly dinosaurs ever known to walk the earth, and it was one of those sauropods, a long-tailed dinosaur, a lot like what people think of as a brontosaurus, but bigger, and phenomenally complete. It was a spectacular specimen, and it was just enormous. Just the femur alone, the thigh bone, was taller than I am and bigger around than I am, and that's not real helpful on the radio. But I'm almost 6 foot.
He's a big guy.
I'm a beefy 6 foot guy. So, yeah, this was an enormous animal.
That's how we measure the stuff in the field. We say one Jason Schein long.
I think the entire shipment was what, Jason? 20 tons?
Yeah, something like that.
Did it go by ship? What'd
like
you put that?
Wow. Yeah,
142 bones.
Container ship, 242.
From the same animal.
From one animal.
Man.
That's, you know, what's that's amazing to me that, you know, I've lived here all my life, and we just didn't realize, or I didn't realize, and I don't think a lot of people from Red Lodge actually realize how many digs are right around us, you know. And
well, I was bragging about Eastern Montana, but people literally come from all over the world to study the Bighorn Basin also, and for paleontology, certainly, but also for all kinds of other things, just general geology, for climate change studies. The Bighorn Basin is world famous for being just a natural laboratory for all different kinds of studies.
That is amazing right there.
The Bighorn Basin is amazing.
It really is. It's that huge area about the size of New Jersey, only has about 30,000 people in it. It's fantastic.
Well, tell us about, I'm curious about the Bighorn Basin.
Paleontological.
Man, I'll tell you what, I rehearsed that all day. I still don't know how to write.
Paleontological. Okay. I get to title still, too.
So that's relatively new, right?
Yes. We went, live, you say, at the end of February. So we're just not even 6 months old at this point. We are a relatively new nonprofit organization dedicated to paleontology and earth science research, education, and outreach.
Wow. And you take, if people want to go with you, you bring people out from anywhere, right? They will come stay?
Absolutely. As long as folks are old enough, and that means 12 and above with an adult. And there's no upper age limit, as long as you are healthy and can physically handle the work and the heat. Yes, we take people from all over the country and even all over the world. One gentleman this year joined us from London.
Wow.
So we take people from all over the world. They come out and they help us find the fossils. They dig up the fossils, and they are really contributing to the science.
And some of them can get college credit for this. Is that right?
Yes, that's true. We also offer a 3-credit course in field paleontology through Rocky Mountain College.
That's how that works.
Yeah. And we have students this year from South Dakota, New Jersey, Connecticut, and Pennsylvania and Delaware.
Wow.
That is amazing.
It is.
Yeah, totally. Jason, are you still there? Are you still standing on the railing?
Yeah, I'm still.
Okay.
I'm still here. I got the antenna still up here. I added some tin foil, so I'm open.
What Jason didn't tell you is that there's a thunderstorm bearing down on his house right now. Oh, he's that dedicated.
Just about. I moved from the backyard to the roof. I'm actually now wearing metal underpants, so right now I get struck by lightning.
Perfect.
Oh, I put on the CNN video. I put on the CNN video on a few posts that they came out and did of you last year. And 4 days worth of filming you guys. And what'd you get? 2.5 minutes. And you sat out by the fire pit and drew for, I think, 3 or 4 hours, wasn't it, for that little bit of stuff. But that was that showed a lot of what you guys do, or I guess a little of what you guys do, but kind of gave the gist of it. Jason.
Yeah, it was really fun when they were out, because they had in mind particular shots that they really wanted. You know, they really wanted to get some of these Jurassic Park kind of moments, you know, with people walking around and sort of prospecting and stuff. And I think what they wanted was a really intense face from me. So they made me walk this gully like 5 times. And finally I had it, and they got their shot. So, but yeah, it actually turned out really fun. It's, you know, as far as sort of sound bite quick kind of stuff, it was a really good sort of overview of what we do. So if you want to take a peek at if you're thinking about coming out, it's a good thing to kind of watch ahead of time.
Yeah, that's what I would
like to think
consider.
Of myself as skinnier.
Well, you are this year, actually. Maybe it's the hair.
Maybe, yeah, that's it.
It's the haircut, but it started growing out by the time you left, so.
Yeah, and the beard.
Always got to have a beard. I don't know if most all of you guys do have beards.
We learned in school that it's a requirement for paleontology. You have to have a beard.
Oh, I see. There you go.
Well, Jason Shine shaved it off the beginning of this year when he first got there, and I had no idea who he was for a couple of days.
at the request of my son, and then he didn't even notice that it happened.
Yeah, that's right.
Okay, so what? And then you do Jason Poole. We got two Jasons here, so you have like Jason Poole. You're an artist as well. I noticed the painting that was in the lodge the other day, and also I noticed that you did some of the graphics on your newsletter and stuff. Is that true?
That's true.
Yeah, yeah,
he did.
He's got a lot of good stuff.
I do a lot of artwork. I work at the museum during the day, and then at home I have my studio here. Sometimes that work overlaps. I get to do prehistoric creatures that one of the guys that I work with, Ted Deschler. I'm really lucky to work with him. He's a great paleontologist. Does incredible Devonian critters that you can see sort of fishes that are developing the physical mechanics to live life on land. And I get to draw a lot of his critters, which is really fun. Because it came out of my dinosaur element, it's fun. But dinosaurs are still my love. I love to do dinosaur paintings and drawings. Black and white is one of my favorite things. Sort of growing up with comic books, I love this sort of feel of just line work. So it's really fun to be able to work even in the field and then back and be inspired by what you've been finding and then sort of put it together in your head and on a canvas so that you share it with people. It is what I'm thinking is going on at the time this happened. You know, it's kind of fun.
That's cool. And I won't ask you your favorite dinosaur because in the first couple minutes of that CNN story, you like all dinosaurs. So.
It's so funny. I looked at that and then I was thinking, they're going to ask me tonight. I'm totally on the different dinosaurs now.
So Jason's too humble to mention it, but he's actually a pretty famous paleo artist. He's had some of his work published in National Geographic and a lot of other places. So if he won't give himself a shout out, I'm happy to. He does amazing work.
Well, we have a book here called A Dynasty of Dinosaurs, and it's a coloring book that you and both Jasons did.
That's right. Jason Poole, we joke that writing and spelling is not exactly Jason Poole's forte, and I can't draw a stick figure. So we put our brains together and compiled one complete functioning brain to create this adult coloring book. And it came out a couple of falls ago, right before that adult coloring book phase or fad kicked in. So it was perfect timing for us.
Well, how would somebody find one of these? Amazon has these?
Absolutely. You can just go on Amazon.com. You can look up either of our last names or A Dynasty of Dinosaurs and find it.
Great present for anybody that likes
dinosaurs. The thing to remember about this book is really, it's cutting edge. So if you buy two of them, you're actually able to see it in stereo.
Stocking stuffers. Yeah, there you go. And they're probably cheaper by the dozen, right, Jason? Okay.
Something like maybe. I don't know.
I'll tell you what we're going to do. We're going to do a commercial and play a song, and then we're going to be right back with you here. We're going to make a few more adjustments because I think there's a couple I can make. And we'll be right back with Jason, Greg, and yours truly here tonight with a special night of Independent Artist Spotlight. We haven't done this before, but I think we're going to do this more often.
I like this.
I do, too. And so hang with us, folks. We'll be right back. Oh, my. That is a delicious adult beverage. What is that?
Well, that's Willie's Montana Honey Moonshine.
Where's Willie's?
Well, take 85 south from Belgrade, 8 miles to Four Corners, then ride on 84 west past the Madison River. Don't forget your fly rod, 29 miles to the Norris Junction stop at the stop sign and go left for 16 miles. Pull into the town pump in Enniskin and ask them, where's Willie's? Or you could just ask for it at your local watering hole. Willie's Distillery, Spirits of the American West, 312 Main, Ennis, Montana, williesdistillery.com.
The Flower Garage has expanded to a patio area with lots of outdoor pots and lawn art, along with lanterns, high-end torches with fire, and just to mention a few of the new items that Beverly has in stock. They've been busy doing weddings all summer, but they still have room for more. Stop in and check out all the fresh flowers and gifts along with local honey. You'll always find something you'll appreciate at the Flower Garage. 1405 North Broadway, right here in Red Lodge, just past the Dollar Store. Or give Beverly or Leah a call today at 406-446-4007. That's 446-4007. The Flower Garage.
The Moose is loose and ready to run. Give for good at the 14th Annual Fun Run for Charities in Red Lodge September 2nd. Run, walk, or trot to support a variety of charities that make Red Lodge such a wonderful place to be. Fun for the whole family. Free barbecue, charity booths, a climbing wall, Pippi the Clown, and so much more. Registration is free until the day of the event, September 2nd at 9 a.m. Join in on the fun. Donate, learn, and register online at redlodgefunrun.org or at the Red Lodge Area Community Foundation.
Hi, I'm Tim Herman.
And I'm Jeff Howell
from the 7th Avenue Band, and we are listening to Music Ranch Radio, Red Lodge, Montana.
My coffin, let me know
to send a picture to you. Johnny, you must do what you have to do.
All right, we are back, and hopefully we've got...
Maybe better.
We don't know. We're going to find out if Jason's over there still. Are you there, Jason?
Yeah, how about... Can you hear me okay?
I'm here.
It both sound better to me, anyway.
That's much better.
That metal underpants must be working, Jason.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I'm just a little nervous about the lightning.
All right. Hopefully that'll I don't think we can do much about Jason Poole's phone on his end, but I think we got it a little better on this end. And it just, you know, we'll read between the lines, Jason.
we'll interpret it.
Am I still cutting in and out a little bit, or is this better?
It's a little bit better, but you are cutting out a little bit, yeah. But Jason Shine already warned us that your cell service is a little iffy out there.
And I pretty much know all of his jokes anyway, so
if one, we can finish it for you.
All right, so on the break, you guys were talking about what Jason Poole would like to mention to everybody. So,
yeah, you wanted to talk about the year and what's coming up next year.
Oh, we had a banner this year. This year was just spectacular. Just made a bunch of new finds, which was spectacular. And then we took a look at an older quarry, and that's going to need to be opened up again. So to the end of every year, like, oh, this was the best year, but I think next year is going to be probably the best year once we have excavation permits and all that stuff to really open things up. That's going to be really exciting. We're going to have a lot of things for a lot of people to do. So if you're on the fence about coming, you know, next year, any of our people that have come before Tom.
Well, I heard you guys said you found more bones than you could even take out of there this year. There were so many.
Absolutely. We were working two main sites, and well, first of all, we weren't allowed to take them all out. We work on public land managed by the BLM, and so we have to get permits to do so. And our permits this year allowed us to take bones off of the surface or make small excavations. And so we found plenty of bones that were just too big that would have forced us to exceed our permits. So we pretty much have to leave those in the ground and come back for them next year.
With the different permits to
exactly
do that?
Exactly, with excavation permits. Yeah. This year they were just collecting permits.
What I found amazing, you were at the site in the North Priors, and you said that site has been dug for 14 years by Glenn Stores?
12 or 14 years by a combination of Dr. Stores at the Cincinnati Museum and for a couple of years, folks from the Museum of the Rockies in Bozeman.
And still.
And they collected, at last count, more than 2,500 bones from this one site in a very small area.
Oh, it is small. It's just this little tiny hole, and they're still finding
absolutely
more bones than they could take out.
We... This was a fairly famous quarry, at least to paleontologists, and some of the folks on our staff this year knew that I had been there several years ago, just to visit, and knew that it was in our area, asked if we could stop by one day, and I thought, sure, we'll stop by there on our way to our regular sites, and lo and behold, we walk up, and there's bone weathering right out of the ground. And
didn't have to dig.
No, you really don't even have to dig. It's right there on the surface. So I called the BLM and told them what was happening, and I asked, you know, we don't want this bone to get destroyed with the ones that are weathering out on the surface, and we know the BLM doesn't want them to get destroyed, so is it all right if we work here even though we weren't planning to? And they said, sure, absolutely.
Now, how do you protect that area while you're gone? I mean...
There's not a whole lot we can do. We pretty much just don't tell people exactly where it is. We fill in the holes and we cover up areas with loose dirt and rock, maybe a little bit of plastic, but we just do what we can to make it look like people had not been there. Just hope for the best.
Does it be all...
We have also...
Go ahead, Jason.
We've also trained a small crew of raccoons with submachine guns to protect it. We're gone.
Honey, that part's also true.
Honey badger. But I've read about the black-footed ferret. Those are seem like they're about half dangerous. So, but does the BLM help you guys at all? I mean, do they kind of know, and do they kind of keep an eye on it for you? Or?
They do. You know, as you know, they're pretty short-staffed, but they do have volunteers that come out and check. We have good we've developed friendships with some of the volunteers. We occasionally dig at their request up at the Acton Recreation Area northwest of Billings.
Yep,
and we've made friends with some of their volunteers up there. And this year, the second day on site, a volunteer just walked up out of nowhere, kind of scared the snot out of us there for a second because we never expect to see anybody where we are. But they come out and check on us once in a while. And if we really need help, like with a four-wheeler or things like that, they have also been enormously helpful to us for that kind of thing.
Well, yeah. And how many of your finds actually get to the Bozeman, to the museum up there in Bozeman?
We don't take any of our finds to Bozeman. All of our bones go to the Academy of Natural Sciences at Drexel University, which is essentially Philadelphia's dinosaur museum.
Well, there you go.
I'm going to brag here for a second because the Academy of Natural Sciences is the oldest still running natural history museum in the New World. So we started this whole paleontology thing in North America. And we're taking it back.
Well, he's right. It's the oldest museum in the New World. It's a world-renowned, distinguished institution. And it has an amazing number of ties to this area. This museum and this collection is where Meriwether Lewis was sent to study, to learn everything he could about science before coming out west on the famous Lewis and Clark expedition. And it was at the Academy where Joseph Leidy, one of the first premier scientists or paleontologists in the New World, his nickname was the last man to know everything because he was a world-renowned expert in so many different fields. And in 1855, Ferdinand Hayden was out in this part of Montana, a little bit north of here, but basically this part of Montana. He found some interesting rocks that he sent back to Joseph Leidy at the Academy, and he identified those as the first dinosaur remains identified from North America. And that was 1855, just 14 years after the word dinosaur was even invented.
So you guys do deserve these bones.
We do. We work hard for them.
And you know, neither one of these guys look that old. So I have a question for you, and I want to take you off that path because that's awesome. But at what point in your young life, and the reason I ask this is I have a grandson that is just vexed with dinosaur everything, bones. And so did you know at a young age that you were going to be a paleontologist, either one of you?
I'll go first, but I certainly want Jason to contribute. I don't want to hog the microphone. But yes, I think if you talk to most paleontologists, they will tell you the same thing, that every kid goes through a dinosaur phase. We just never grew out of ours. But you know, it went beyond that too. Some of my earliest and best memories were from my dad taking my brother and I out to collect fossils in Alabama, where I grew up. But I also knew that being a paleontologist meant that I would get to travel to some of the most beautiful and remote places left on the planet, that I would get to be kind of an explorer, which I always wanted to do. But at some point I realized that unless you're one of six people going into outer space or three people going to the bottom of the ocean, there's not that many places to explore anymore. But if you are a paleontologist, you get to go to these beautiful places and you're still an explorer. You're just exploring back in time in nature's and Earth's history.
Hundreds of millions of years.
Yes, absolutely.
I know. That's the thing that's so intriguing to me. It's like we're not talking about 150 years ago, you know, 150 million years ago or whatever. But
how about you, Jason? Pool?
For me, it was like a quiet action. I mean, I often joke that dinosaurs are like the doorway to science in general. But for me, sort of as an artist growing up, drawing from comic books and learning how to draw from comics, at the time that I coming up, there's a lot of dinosaurs in comic books. And I used to also spend some time on the weekends every now and then with my dad, and we'd collect fern fossils and stuff. So kind of my excitement for finding stuff that nobody had ever been seen before or never found before, and the dinosaurs in the comics that sort of collided. And it was funny, in high school I had to go quiet about it because there were a couple of other guys in high school that were total dinosaur nuts and nobody would talk to them. So it's kind of like my obsession kept on the down low. But I totally love dinosaurs, and even more than that, the excitement of being out and finding something that's been lying in the ground for 145 million years. And the prospect of putting it back together and learning something from it, that just flips me out. It's really cool. It's something that I think everybody who has access to that experience. That's the same kind of thing. That's that same rush. It's really neat.
It's a lot different than finding a 150 million year old rock, but you got a living something that was living 150 million years ago.
Yeah, we tell the guys that come out with us, the second they see a fossil and they get to touch it, you tell them they're the first person possibly first thing to touch that bone in 145 million years. And 145 million years ago, probably smelled horrible, so nobody wanted to bet. There were no people around then. But the neat thing is that it's been preserved, and the preservation is crazy. These things are sort of mineralized on a microscopic level, and it takes thousands of years, you know, and then they sit there. And the fact that they sit there and they're basically what they were when they went into the ground, only now they're stone, that's amazing. And people tend to take a couple minutes to let that sink in, because that says to us we have a responsibility to this dead thing, to make sure it can spend the rest of its afterlife in our care, ready for people to study it. That's pretty wicked.
It is wicked. Let's think about that for a second.
Yeah. That's beyond wicked. That's crazy, man.
I'm sorry. I'm off my soapbox now.
No, that's good. I had somebody text me about... especially this site that you have all these bones. How many different dinosaurs, or was it just one type of dinosaur in your at the North Pryor site?
Oh, at that site, that's actually one of the reasons that this particular site is so famous, because out of those 2,500 bones, just about every single one of them was from one type of dinosaur, and they appear to be juvenile Diplodocus, so another one of those long-neck, long-tailed dinosaurs. And, you know, bone beds that are that thick with bones are, of course, rare and spectacular, but certainly not unheard of. But to find that many bones and that dense of a bone bed, and they're all just from one particular species, is fascinating, amazing, yeah. And opens up some really interesting questions, like, number one, why? So 2,500 bones and about five teeth from an allosaur, which was like the T-Rex of the Jurassic, essentially, so from a predator. But that particular site, just one species. But most other sites where you have a lot of bones, they might be several species.
And you guys don't just look for the bones. You try to put together what was going on at that area at the time, like a CSI case, like you said.
Absolutely. You know, we talk a lot about dinosaurs, and honestly, we use dinosaurs as the hook to get people to go out with us. But once they're there, we teach them everything we can about the geology, the paleoecology, what other plants and animals were living at the time, and we collect everything. I tell people all the time, we're not just trophy hunters. We want to collect everything, and we want to understand everything we can about the entire ecosystem. So we will collect the dinosaurs, but of course we collect fragments of plant fossils, crocodiles, turtles, just about anything that we can find, so that we get that full picture of what was living out there and how these plants and animals may have been interacting.
And then Jason Poole could put it to paint.
It's one of the things I enjoy the most is getting to a point where we've got a good image, or a working sort of image, of what these places were like and what was going on. Recently I've been really flipped out about footprints. Footprints are really incredible. You know, they tell us this story about these animals when they were alive. So the bones tell us about when they were dead. the footprints tell us, you know, a couple minutes of what they were doing while they were alive. It's pretty neat. So if we can collect any sort of fossil, even non-fossils, even just a rock, can tell us a little bit about what the place was like. And that's pretty cool.
Yeah.
For many, many years. So I have a question.
Yeah.
Does it change either one of yours or your opinion? And I don't know what your opinion is, but as far as, I guess what I'm saying, evolution.
Does it change my opinion?
Or not necessarily opinion, but I don't know how even I would word that, but
it strengthens my opinion. I mean, the thing with science and evolution is that, you know, the idea that there's this hypothesis or this theory, and it stands because you can't disprove it. And what we're doing is we're out there and we're seeing more and more evidence for it every day. And that's pretty cool. I mean, it's one of these things that and we use theory too loosely. We always say, oh, I got a theory about this. No, you don't have a theory. You don't have a hypothesis. You know, it's kind of just an idea at this point. So what we're seeing is that the more we collect, especially if we can collect like more and more of the same animal. And it sounds boring. You know, like everybody wants to find the next new biggest dinosaur or whatever. We already did that. We're bored with that. We want to find as much as we can of some of the same dinosaurs, some other animals that are there to support the story. But the neat thing is how these animals were changing, how they were adapting to their changing environments, that kind of thing. And we know it happens. So really what we're looking for isn't necessarily what the story's about, because we've got that. We want to see how the story unfolded, and that's really cool. That's to me that excites me about educating people that are coming up and saying, you know, this story is something that we don't know all the scenes yet. You know, we're not even sure all the characters yet. So it's a really cool thing to study because of that.
But what you're doing is actually set in stone. But your evidence is set in stone. It's not a hypothesis, so to speak.
Well, as technology advances, you know, it's just like what they found with the eclipse. You know, with their different tests that they did with the balloons, and which, by the way, originated out of Harrowtown up here.
That's right.
But and the telescopes and the jets that they flew ahead, and so they actually, instead of the 2 minutes and 30 seconds, they ended up with 90 minutes, I think, pretty much of continuous thing. Now, do you find with you guys is it that way with technology with paleontology?
Well, to a certain extent, and one of the great things about paleontology is that at least what we do in the field, for the most part, has not changed since paleontology got started for 150 years. And that's one of the things I like the most about it. It's still just, for the most part, basic hand tools like shovels and picks, a lot of sweat, some muscle, and sometimes a little bit of blood, sometimes a lot of blood. It just depends. But in the last 15 or 20 years, all of a sudden, technology has really entered the field, and there are just a few paleontologists who have really embraced using technology in all different aspects. And I unfortunately won't be able to speak very intelligently about this, but I have friends. One of my friends, Phil Manning, who's actually in Red Lodge right now, he takes these amazing fossils and takes them to Stanford or to the synchrotron in Europe and blasts them with electrons and basically comes up with a map of the elements that are left from the fossil. And he's not figuring out what the colors were yet, but he's figuring out the pigments that were left behind. And that's kind of like
So the actual color, they're not all green.
Right. They're not all green. He's not figuring out colors yet, but you know, you got to figure out, you got to walk before you can run.
Yeah.
And that's really what he's doing. So there are, and we have another friend, Dr. Jennifer Anae in Indianapolis. She does just amazing stuff with chemistry and physics that, again, I can't even really speak intelligently about because it's so over my head. But there are a few people.
So does DNA come into play there?
Oh, that's a good question. I'll let Jason answer that one.
Okay.
this is a very difficult question. No. Unfortunately, so far, DNA does not come into it. The whole amber thing for Jurassic Park didn't work. The interesting thing is that biomolecules are one of these things that people are looking at. So these little microscopic stretchy bits of stuff that are still in the bones that should be all mineralized, basically should be all rock, we're still getting these, you know, viable pieces of biology. So it should be all geology, and we're getting biology. Interestingly, though, we're basically finding these things. American Schweitzer's doing sort of, she's on the cutting edge of this stuff, and I think she's in North Carolina, do great work. And what we're waiting for is for other laboratories to find other ways to do what she's doing. So, you know, if you sort of are getting the same results in the same ways, that's great. But if a couple of different scientists are all getting the same results in different ways, that really strengthens the sort of believability of what's going on. And right now, they're just really trying to figure out what it is that they're extracting from this bone and trying to be sure that it's dinosaur stuff. From there, you know, we say now that no, probably DNA is not going to be something we can find. However, when I was a kid, we couldn't microwave, you know, a hot dog. So, you know, as technology moves forward, we're going to find things that we didn't think were possible. And that's another thing that makes the science so cool.
So you don't think they'll be able to recreate a dinosaur?
Well, actually, there are people trying to recreate dinosaurs just in other ways and I'm oversimplifying here, but kind of reverse engineering chickens, essentially. Mm-hmm. And again, Jason can speak much better about this than I can. But there are people trying to go about it just from different directions.
Wow. That's amazing.
There
was
that one, not a whole lot of people know about, and there's this guy out there in Montana. Little known guy. I think his name was Jack Horner. sort of a joke. So Jack Horner's been doing some great work, and one of the projects that he's working on is Chickenosaurus. And what they're trying to do is they're trying to change the way a chicken develops by allowing certain things to express themselves or not as the chicken grows. And what they're trying to do is they're trying to sort of turn off the ability for the chicken to grow sort of modern chicken features. So basically what it'll be left with is being able to grow dinosaur features. Wow. When this thing hatches, you go, there's a little dinosaur, which is redundant because all birds are dinosaurs. So, but it's cool.
Make great pets.
The idea that you could go to a zoo and see, you know, you go to a zoo and see like a velociraptor, that's pretty cool.
It only take one egg to feed everybody up there. Wow, it is amazing, though, what they're, you know, I mean, the stuff that we probably don't even know about that they're doing or trying to do or whatever, you know, but it's just, I know people, but you guys do, we about, contrary to some popular belief these days.
And that's the interesting thing is the more we learn about the past, the more we can make intelligent decisions and kind of figure out what changes our own world may go through.
Right.
So if we don't have a clear view of what's going on in the past or what happened in the past, we really aren't going to have a very good idea of what to expect in the future, especially with global temperature change, climate change, all that stuff. Climate change is going to affect us.
Yeah.
I don't care if you're into it or not. You know, you might want to raise your house if you're coastal.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, and Jason started to touch on this a little while ago, too. But, you know, there's all this talk now about we need more scientists. We need more kids to be more scientifically literate. All of society needs to be more scientifically literate. And that's one of the great things about paleontology is that it is the perfect gateway science to get kids involved in science, because every kid goes through a dinosaur phase. And from dinosaurs, I can talk about chemistry and physics and climate change and ecology. But nowadays, you can even talk about computer engineering and regular engineering and just about every branch, every subject that we need kids to get involved with now. I have a starting point from dinosaurs, and every kid already loves dinosaurs. So it's just it's a perfect gateway and a perfect way to get more people and kids involved in science.
Well, what is your both of you guys your degree, your background in your PhD? Do you have geology and paleontology, or what do you have?
Well, I got my undergrad and master's degrees in geology from Auburn University. I went up to Drexel University to get my PhD, and it's been a while, and I'm still working on that. but I got into geology because, first of all, I loved it. I just absolutely, from the first moment I ever stepped foot out west, I knew I wanted to study geology or study dinosaurs through geology. But I also did that because I thought all paleontologists were geologists. And that was the case, but a long, long time ago. And it was too late in school for me to switch and change to biology at that time, because nowadays most paleontologists start out as biologists. But I wouldn't have changed anyway. I love geology. Yeah. I love the geology department at Auburn. But Jason took a relatively unusual route into paleontology.
Jason?
Yeah, that's true. Don't tell anybody, but I'm highly dyslexic.
Nobody's listening.
I'm extremely dyslexic. So I had a tough time early on in school, which I think is one of the reasons why, you know, I think everybody has artists in them. And I think it's whether you sort of lean on that or whether you sort of spend the time to really develop it. You know, and for me, it was the way I expressed myself. Artwork was the way that I had to go, oh, you're not completely stupid. So that's the thing. That's the part of me that was really encouraged to grow. But I also had parents that were excited about science. I had teachers that were terrific and were into science. That inspired me to really put together the art and science. I love osteology, which I've always loved bones. I used to collect deer bones and cow bones, and I had a basement. It was probably really macabre, but osteology, the study of bones, that excites me because there's a functionality piece to that. And there's also a sort of sculptural shape, everything that you're looking at. So my background is I'm a classically trained artist, and there are a lot of fossil preparators, people that actually get the rock off of the fossils and get the skeletons put back together. These people tend to have an art background. They understand negative space. They understand things like how materials will work, and they tend to be very creative thinkers. How are we going to make something work? How do you move a 500-pound bone around in a very small laboratory and not have everybody killed by it? You know, so and these are kind of the kinds of challenges that I face, and my art background, believe it or not, sort of allows me to do that. But I've also gone back to school for a lot of anatomy and taxonomy. And taxonomy in my lifetime has changed very dramatically. It went from the Linnaean sort of tree of life, you know, to this cladistic way of mathematically looking at the relationships between different types of animals. So I had to relearn all of that stuff because high school just wasn't cutting it anymore. I had to go back to school to learn all of that stuff. And that's very exciting because it's all based, for paleontology, it's all based on the shapes of the bones. Sure. So that makes sense to me. I'm a visual learner, a visual thinker. So, that's really one. I, if when I finally retire, what I hope to be able to look back on is that I've excited people that are like me, visual thinkers, people that appreciate just the shapes of things, the bones themselves, that sort of thing, to scientifically look at it. So that's my hope.
Yeah, that goes hand in hand to do all that. Takes both.
Very awesome.
Yeah.
Well, we're going to leave. We've got a couple minutes here. And what I want to do is I want you guys to talk about your organizations, how people can become members, where they need to go, what they can do. And Greg, even YBRA, you know, if because this is a big all-inclusive kind of a deal, really.
Well, Jason's on our advisory board, or you're a council member on YBRA too, right?
That's right. That's right. And I would like to say that we absolutely could not do what we do without YBRA. It is an amazing organization that's been around for more than 80 years now and really facilitates and helps to create the education that all these students come out to this area to receive. We just couldn't do without what we do without YBRA. It's fantastic.
Awesome.
I'll agree with that.
I'll second that and say that Jeanette's cooking, the kitchen staff, I wouldn't be able to do it without some of those meals. I come back and I go, I don't know how she made that.
Made to order bacon for all you guys.
Yeah, somehow we come out here for weeks at a time, work our tails off, and we still go back fatter than we can. Thanks, Jeanette.
Is there a little Finlander cooking there, do you think?
Yeah, I think a little bit.
I think so, yeah.
Well, and then how about your organization? Again, how can they, you have a website, Facebook?
We do. We are on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram, but the website is www.bbpaleo.org. That is BB as in Bighorn Basin, paleo.org. You can learn, you can sign up to join us on the expeditions there. You can also sign up to become a member, make a donation. Of course, contact me or and Jason for any questions you might have. We're a new organization. We're always looking for any suggestions or tips folks might have. And of course, we love answering questions.
Boy, that's
the really cool thing about the membership is that it's a lot like the coloring book. If you buy two memberships, we'll send you two receipts for that, and you can see that in stereo. So, it's just like the coloring book.
Hey, that's cheap at twice the price.
He's a salesman. All right, guys. Well, thank you so much for. I know you're busy, and you're Jason. You got your family here, which is cool, and I know they've been missing you. You were out what, 7 or 8 weeks this summer?
Well, I left town about.
Oh wait, never mind.
We got Sarah in the back.
10 weeks.
No, 10.
Oh yeah. I got into town in Red Lodge about June 28th, and I'm headed out in a few days. So it's been a long summer, long in the best sense. It's beautiful. We absolutely love it here. Maybe hopefully one day make this our permanent home instead of just our summer home. But
sure.
Yeah, it's been a long time.
Well, I'll tell you what, it's much appreciated what you guys do.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think it's, I hope that a lot of kids from the Red Lodge High School get involved, you know.
We would love that.
And so.
Well, can we say something real quick about Tippett Rise that you're doing tomorrow for the last day of the year? But
well, absolutely. But I am doing that as part of YBRA. So Tippett Rise has been running these geology and paleontology tours throughout the month of August on Thursdays. And I'm representing YBRA and leading those tours for those good folks. And it's everybody knows it's an incredibly beautiful place, but they may not know how geologically and paleontologically fascinating the place is, too. So that's what I'm trying to get folks to understand is give them a three and a half hour tour of the place and tell them about the amazing geologic history, and hopefully they learn something.
Wow. Awesome.
Yeah.
Tippett Rise is a big deal.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
You know? I get to go tomorrow with them.
Oh, do you now?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, well, good for you. As you should. All right, guys, thank you very much. And, you know, for you folks that are tuned in, and we've got a bunch of them from LA to back east to the Midwest.
Thanks.
We're glad that you tuned in. We hope that everybody learned a little something about paleontology, number one, in Montana and Wyoming, the basin over there. And you know, if you got any questions, go to the websites, the Facebook pages. I'm sure you guys watch those, and you can post a couple questions if you got them. And
please do.
It'll be awesome. So there we go. Another. Yeah. Rollicking. This was a great show.
Yeah. No breaks or nothing.
No breaks or nothing. We didn't
tired.
Need them. We didn't need them. We didn't even do a Willie's commercial.
Oh, hey. Yeah. I have to do two when we hang up.
Maybe one. Yeah. All right, guys. We're gonna start a song. And thanks again, Jason Poole, down there wherever you're at.
He's in Philly.
Philly.
Philly. Down there in Philly. And
Philadelphia representing.
Good. Grab a cheesesteak for me. All right, guys.
That's what I had.